to Fired Up California, where we are igniting the Golden State's political pulse with unfiltered truth and red hot takes. I'm your host, William Del Pilar, a conservative Latino. And that's right, people. Believe it or not, I am Latino. Tonight, we're diving into the seismic shift rocking the California Republican Party. Woo! Talk about writers being overly dramatic. Jessica Patterson's wrapping up her lackluster run as Republican State Party Chair. Think of it as a farewell tour with no encore, capped by a snooze-fed spring convention that couldn't even ride Trump's victory wave. Meanwhile, Corn Rankin's stepping up, a Trump loyalist with grit and a vision to make California great again. We've got a Republican Party, a state Republican Party, that is, that's supposedly on the cusp of revival here in California. A Democratic supermajority teetering? Well, not quite. And Gavin Newsom's tiny homes promise crumbling faster than Snow White's box office receipts. From Tesla's robo-taxi dreams to budget crisis and voter ID fights, we are unpacking it all. So gear up, Californians. This is Fired Up. It's going to scorch. And let's get down to it. But don't forget, you can check us out at GrumDiesMedia.com, bookmark it. But also at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora, under the handle Grumblies Media. So first up, Jessica Patterson's grand flop, the state Republican Party's farewell to a Trump-hating do-nothing diva. I guess you can tell I don't really care for her. Shea Patterson is concluding her role as the chairwoman of the California Republican Party. She started out in 2019, and I guess this is her closing finale. You know, I was not able to make it this year to the convention. I had some family emergency, and I missed out, so I had to make some phone calls. And obviously she was on topic when I asked about it. So a few people told me that they agreed with what I read, that it was a bit lackluster. There wasn't much electricity. There was no excitement, no joy. And it failed to capitalize on the Republican momentum following Donald Trump's election win. So I don't know if I would agree with that, just thinking of Corin Rankin getting elected. But who knows? I trust my friends and what they said. But that said, take it for what it's worth. Attendance was notably low. So that I found surprising, with fewer vendors and booths, and it contributed to an underwhelming atmosphere, again, despite the Trump momentum that we have. Now, I'm not a Jessica Patterson fan. If you go to GrumliesMedia.com, you will see an article I wrote there about her many years ago, I want to say 2019, that really lays out who and what she is, who she represents, what she represents. And the term rhino is really thrown around quite a bit, but she truly encompasses that term. But then again, she is a Charles Munger Jr. former employee, and she's a Kevin McCarthy servant. So that alone should tell you. For those of you not aware, Charles Munger Jr. was a liberal who ran the Republican Party because he funded the Republican Party for many years, I want to say right around 2009. But, you know, too many Republicans since her tenure began, they believe her actions and policies and political campaigns, and it's underlined by the fact she either despised Donald Trump or listened to the establishment portion of the party to ignore and avoid him at all costs. And that was a sentiment reportedly evident at the convention. She's more aligned with Washington, D.C. and former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy rather than California-specific issues. That's my belief. She has a history of neglecting state-level Republican candidates. That's a fact. Prioritizing congressional races and D.C. interests over local GOP growth. That's a fact as well. At a press meeting during the convention, Patterson claimed to have registered over 1 million Republicans since 2019. And she presents that as a significant accomplishment. Now, that is a significant accomplishment if what she said was true. But it's far from the truth. She had nothing to do with the million registered Republicans. That had everything to do with Trump, his campaign, and his surrogates in this state. And some people attribute it to Rick Grenell's Fix California initiative, and that launched in 2021. I'm not sure about that, but I do know the grassroots, despite her, were out there signing people up. And with the anger towards Democrats, it wasn't hard. But Patterson, she had absolutely zero to do with that. That I do know. So they were saying Rick Grenell, he's a former Trump administrator, administration official, and they said he has a long-term strategy. You know, I don't know about that, how active that was. But at the end of the day, we did get a million more, and that was because of Trump. That we do know. And the other thing I read, and I can verify just through my past experience, that it shows an older demographic at the convention, no one under 30 years old visible, indicating a failure to engage younger conservatives. Now, that's always been the case. I don't put that on Patterson. But part of the reason of hiring somebody who was younger at the time when she was elected chair was because of her youth, how her young age, being able to get the youth vote. And she's failed at that as well, despite the existence of eager conservative youth. But they need to be actively welcomed by party leadership, and they're not. And the ones that are tend to be the acolytes of the establishment. So they're in it to make a career. And they are in it to make things happen from the Rhino perspective. So Patterson's exit was framed as a personal tour. I see it as mostly self-focused, aggrandizing herself, you know, making comments, hoping people will believe him. Now, this cycle, there were plenty and plenty of Trump wannabe voters. And again, the state Republican Party had minimal, if anything, to do with getting them signed up. So the pro-Trump grassroots-oriented viewpoint is and was always skeptical of establishment figures like Patterson and her ties to McCarthy. I'm in that group. I saw it firsthand. We have a need for a massive infusion of youth and a shift in leadership focus. And we're getting that shift in leadership focus with Gordon Rankin. And that's needed to revitalize the CAGOP, with Patterson's departure seen as an opportunity for the party to realign. I mean, you have Trump's momentum, but we also have California-specific challenges, and we need to merge the two together to create an infusion that pushes this party forward. Speaking of Corinne Rankin, let's move on to her. From Trump surrogate to CAGOP chair, a vision to redefine California's GOP. So I started this out with my notes here. The queen is dead. Long live the queen. The California Republican Party has crowned its newest leader. And I've known of her since she got going. And I started following the party in 2015, or being involved actively in the party in 2015. After COVID, I've been, you know, a bit shaky on it and trying to get this up and going. But one of the goals I have is to get more involved. And with new leadership, I actually see a reason to do that. I know this for a fact, watching her and talking to people who supported her and who know her, and even those who weren't too keen on her, that she's ambitious, but she's a team player. And most importantly, she's a staunch Trump advocate. And supposedly, she's going to bring a promising new light to the Republican Party here in California. And her rise follows the disgrace of two previous state chairs in Jim Brulte and Jessica Milan Patterson, who enriched themselves at the party's expense while Republicans lost ground exponentially. We went from a purple state in their time frame to a deep blue state by the end of Patterson's reign. You know, in fact, the Democrat supermajority cemented during Jessica Milan Patterson's reign that began during Brulte's reign. And in California, a supermajority means one party controls two-thirds of the legislative branch. And what that means they can pass any law they want. So she was born and raised in Menlo Park, California. So Rankin is a true blue Californian. And what's really interesting, she's a black woman. She grew up with her father's bail bonds business. When I brought her name up to my friend back home, it kind of like, I could tell when they paused. Really? She went that route? You know, her father founded it in 1968. She later took it over after nearly a decade working in Silicon Valley tech. So I don't know if she lost her business when California did away with bail bonds, but if it was in existence then, she probably lost it. I want to say she did, but I can't. I didn't even think of researching that out, but I vaguely remember reading it, but don't quote me on it. But she has private sector experience. I believe that's incredibly important in politics. Too many career-minded politicians who never run a business, they're why this country's in the mess it is, why this state is in the mess it is, and that's from both sides of the aisle. And if it came from tech, even better. She has an understanding of the new wave of business and the mentality with that. Working bail bonds, that's an old brick and mortar. So that shaped her problem-solving approach is what I'm told. It emphasizes actionable result over rhetoric, I hope. And supposedly that's a philosophy she's carried into politics. You know, they say she has significant ties to Donald Trump. I think people throw that around. I think she's part of the machine. And she got involved with Trump, and God bless her for that, because in 2016, getting involved with Donald Trump, especially if you were black, was a death sentence, you know, in terms of how you were treated, how you were seen by both parties. And I'm referring to the parties here in California and nationally with Trump as well. So she served as an on-air surrogate for his 2016 presidential campaign. She was a whip at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, and the statewide coalition director for African Americans for Trump. I knew the people who led the Trump march in 2015, 2016. So I don't think she was very high on the radar as much as the resume states. But the point in all this, people, is that she was involved with it from the get-go. And I don't mean to play the race card here, but as a black woman, that took a lot of gumption, took a lot of guts, and God bless her for that. You know, she continued her Trump affiliation. She did not give up on Trump after he won. She did not. It could have been easy to jump on the bandwagon and ignore Trump, not talk about him like 90% of the California Republicans did. She was the national surrogate in his 2024 campaign, and she contributed to his victories. And I believe she did. I've seen her rise from afar. She started out as Central Valley vice chair in 2021. She spent 2 years. When you're the vice chair, you do some traveling. So she traveled up and down California, and that's when I started hearing whispers of, yeah, William, she's gunning for the chair when Patterson's reign ends, and it's her time to be able to jump in there. So she's ambitious, and there's nothing wrong with that. We're all ambitious in politics. The problem is most of us will put our toe in the water. We don't jump in, and she jumped in. And again, God bless her for that. I'm a big supporter of that. She went against the grain, and when people go against the grain, I have high respect for that. You know, so she assisted with voter registration, fundraising, supporting Republican candidates, all part of the responsibility of the chair. In 2023, she was elected vice chair of the CAGOP, as we call it out here. And people who ascend to the vice chair, again, it's just a given that their ambition is to contend for the chair. And I know somebody who told me that, who was gunning for that and chose to pull back at the last minute for a variety of reasons. But again, it's a role that positioned her as a natural successor to Patterson. So it was March 16th. It was at the annual convention just a week ago. She was elected to chair. She defeated former state senator Mike Morrell. And they say it was decisive, 747 to 559. I don't know how decisive that is. But she replaced Patterson. Now, Morrell, my understanding is, had the grassroots conservative. So that means there was a split between the grassroots. And her victory marked a historic milestone. First black woman. Patterson was the first Latina woman. I don't give a rat's ass about that. I was chastised by somebody who was Latino. Why don't you support Jessica Milan Patterson or Jessica, as I was told? You need to support her. She's Latina. I'm like, hold up. As a sailor, well, I was polite. I can't lie and beef it up to what I said. I said, look, just because she's Latina, I don't give a rat's tail. I care what she does. And when I researched Patterson, she was everything I did not support. She's not one of my brethren. My brethren are conservatives. You know, whether you're black, Latino, white, Asian, Indian, whatnot. Those are my brethren. Just because somebody's Latino or Latina does not mean we're automatically brethren. I don't play that game. But, and Rankin doesn't play the game either, considering her culture. So she actually came out and said, quote, I'm a qualified person who happens to be a woman, who happens to be black. That's what America is about. And if that's what she embodies, then I'm on that bandwagon for now. So the real question is, who she's going to represent. Because was she able to preserve her conservative principles, or does climbing the party ladder require concessions to the establishment? In the past, it did. You either did what the party told you, or you would not gain support. You would not receive support as a chair. That happened with Tom Del Picarro, a former chair who was in the intra-party battles, the party establishment, who had the ties to the donors, went to the donors and said, do not support this chair. Let him run his couple of years and we'll get him out. And that's what happened. And the party started going into debt. You know, so the question becomes, where does she stand? And I don't know. At this point, maybe it's a combination. Maybe the losing's gotten so bad that even the donors are saying, man, we gotta change something here. So I would expect at best a combination of compromise, which is what politics is all about, and I get that. My conservative brethren do not understand. You've got to compromise to succeed in politics. That's what the founding fathers built this whole nation under, is political compromise. So she aims to unify and empower the CAGOP. She talks about conservative principles. She's talking about forward momentum, in essence, capturing the Trump momentum and taking it forward, building a sustainable pathway to victory. You know, that's all political talk. So actions will determine what really happens. So she wants to move the party. What I really like about what I research and what I assume is what she means. She wants to move it beyond opposition. She wants to go on the offensive. Now, I completely disagree with going on the offensive and going into San Francisco. Maybe shore up your purplish counties that were once conservative and grow it from there. But the truth of the matter is the deep voter base are in the urban areas. But you pick and choose the conservative districts and you grow from there. And I would assume that's what her game plan is. She's got 10 years of history tied to Trump. So she wants to maintain the strong relationship with the administration, which is the exact opposite of what the last chair did. You know, her goal is make California great again. And that obviously reflects an intent to leverage Trump's influence to challenge the Democrats. And the Democrats, people, are one-party rule. We pose no challenge to the Democrats today. So can she take the electoral gains that Trump made? You know, because I'll be honest, the Republican Party of California did nothing in any of the gains they made this past cycle. It was called the Trump coattails. Now, she's got an ally in Los Angeles, which is the biggest California Republican county in the country, in Roxanne Hogue. So that's good to know. And hopefully she probably has support along other counties. And she dismisses fears of the 2018 midterm losses. And, you know, I got to ride that bandwagon for now. It's way too early to tell. Trump's getting all the nasty stuff with the tariffs and all that up front now. Hopefully it'll be done and gone with by the time the midterms roll around. And again, Trump's coattails made all the gains. So what she has to do to keep going is she's got to get these candidates into blue districts. Look, campaigning is your base fundamentals, and the California Republican Party has abandoned that. We need precinct captains. We need a strong ground game to start happening, and that's what she needs to make sure it gets implemented. She must start looking at figuring out ways to raise money for school board races and city council races, specifically school board races, to lay the groundwork for the long-term future, because that's where the indoctrination happens, people. And great transition. I'm looking at my notes like, woo! So she seeks to empower county committees, grassroots leaders, and volunteers. She does that, she can get a ground game going again. Part of the problem is the establishment has done everything to cut the conservative grassroots at the knees. And here's what they hated the real. They don't realize it, and they hated to admit. Without those grassroots conservatives, there is no ground game. There are no phone banks. Callers. There's nothing. It's all at a minimum. There are 80-year-olds doing all this work for you, and they're not going to be walking but 10 minutes a day. You know, so they've got to get youthful, and they do, and they've got to get the middle class or middle-aged conservative grassroots going, and they get their kids going, because a lot of their kids are conservative. Don't let college destroy you. And if she can get that done, then she can succeed. And she says she's committed to protect every vote, which that has to be done for us to even have any shot. Transparency, fairness, and accountability in the electoral process. It's a nice way of saying we've got to stop the voter fraud. So, you build on the electoral momentum. She inherits a CAGOP that is bland and dying with a party that made gains because of Trump coattails. Trump flipped 10 counties from blue to red, and then Republicans flipped three state legislative seats. Again, off the strength of his coattails. She's got to capture that. Prop 36 passed. That was a Republican-led initiative against Newsom's soft-on-crime policies. That wasn't the Republican Party. That was constituents just tired of the crime. You see, you have to be able to separate what we actually do as a party with the momentum of outside forces. And that's a big challenge for her. Not to mention we're a deep blue Democrat trifecta. You know, she wants to navigate an uphill battle against Governor Newsom's $50 million legal defense fund that's going to target potential Trump admin threats. And he's going to do everything to demonize anybody who supports Trump. Democrats do retain all statewide offices and the legislative supermajority. But there's an outcry for some common sense. So there is optimism, and that optimism should be seen as a major positive. You take the positive and you move forward. And I wish Corinne Rankin much success. I'll be honest, I got rave reviews from her from somebody who I trust implicitly, and I've never heard anything bad. I heard there were some rumblings. We will wait to see. Again, no true blue grassroots conservative will ever elevate themselves to state chair because it's a compromise. And our grassroots activists, sometimes they can be too fundamental with their belief system and not realize we're going to keep losing unless we learn how to compromise. So, Ms. Rankin or Mrs. Rankin, I wish you much success, and I hope to join you in the ride. And with that, my friends, let's keep moving. I want to first, before we continue moving on, I want to bring on my guest today. Usually I do this show with Tyler Collins, but I'm bringing up I'm bringing somebody from the majors down to the minors. California, Fired Up California is still a new show, so I just tease when I say that. But I want to introduce you all to Mr. G. Mangani.
Hey there.
The Rancho Santa Fe School Board. That's as good as you can get for California Fired Up. Technically, G, you are our first, I want to say you're our first guest on here that we've had on. You know, tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm a elected board member at the Rancho Santa Fe School District in 2018 and reelected in 2022. And the job that pays the bills is I'm a software engineer and I run my own consulting company. So, and I'm a frequent co-host with William over on Fired Up, the national edition, I guess we could call it.
The majors, the big show, the big show. How's that?
That's right, yeah. The AAA.
Well, let's get down to it, G. I just got through talking about Jessica Patterson and Corinne Rankin. I'm actually looking forward to it. I think everything I've read, what I've been told, she may have been, I don't know if she was the right person, but on paper she seems to be the right person. Just real quick, your thoughts on my belief that, look, no grassroots conservative will ever elevate themselves to the state party chair without making compromise. I don't view that as an evil sin, and I think too many conservatives hurt the party because they refuse to budge on that without understanding we need to compromise. Am I wrong, or is there a way a conservative can ascend? I think you can keep your values and still ascend and compromise. Your thoughts?
No, I think that if you look at our Republican Party in California, it's probably analogous to the Democrat Party in some of these deep red states, right? There's probably a very thin line that separates many of our beliefs. And, you know, I'm more of a principled conservative. I don't think I could ever run for the state level because you'd have to compromise. So you're talking that, you know, maybe some Republicans up in San Francisco are so far left that, you know, they would be the extreme left in a place, you know, I'm not going to throw out a state, but just any red state that you think of, you might think that, okay, well, now I've got to placate these people and these people and that's just a thankless job. I always believe, someone said, Bill O'Reilly said recently that the Democrat Party is probably on the precipice of their 1932 moment and being out in the wilderness for 20 years. And I think, okay, yeah, if that's the case, then the Republican Party will end up splitting up because we need to find someone to disagree with, right? And that's going to be the quote-unquote rhinos and the MAGAs and conservatives. Really, there's three groups of people there that comprise the Republican Party right now. And I count myself more of a conservative rather than a completely a MAGA person. And I did listen to your earlier monologue on Corin, and I think, you know, if you remove Trump away from his policies, right, because I think Trump's policies are a lot more centrist than people want to admit. But it's just their TDS that gets in the way, right? You can ask them, do you agree with this, and then you know those five things. They'll say, yes, I agree with those five things. Oh, great, that's what Trump believes. All of a sudden, they're against it, right? Exactly. So can Corin bring forth the CAGOP and say, here are the principles, and not necessarily hammer Trump down people's throats and get people on board and say, no, we agree with those principles, and not make it about Trump? Because, look, in 2 years, Trump is going to be on his way to being a lame duck, and we've got to, you know, find our footing as a party without Trump.
Oh, I agree. I think you hit it on the head. You know, I don't think there's much daylight between a MAGA and a principled conservative, to be frank, especially when you separate the two. Now, because I've always felt conservatism, this is my issue with libertarians. It's like they look on paper. That's who I am. I'm like, okay, that's nice on paper. Now, this is reality in real life. And I think conservatives, when push comes to shove, it's about common sense. And I think Trump is common sense, and his common sense is what allows for compromise. The problem is there's so much TDS. The next 2 years will determine the path the country moves forward on. If Trump is successful, he will overwhelmingly start to take Latinos and Blacks, not in the majority, but in the point where the Democrat Party looks at their existence and goes, we need a completely new platform here, because the platform of tribalism and hate and emotion is no longer cutting it. Because we're now in so much debt, Biden's inflation, the costs are so high. In Canada, a home to live in $750,000. I got news for you people. It's about anywhere from $750,000 to $850,000 here in California. You know, so the next 2 years will dictate a lot. My take on Corin Rankin is she's saying all the right things. I've heard nothing but good things, but actions is what I've always lived my life through. That's why when it comes to the business world, I have a lot of peers and people who I have acquaintances who I have a good time with, but when it comes to actually working together, a different story emerges, because I'm like, I'm looking at your actions, and that's how I judge if I want to work with you. So with that, G, let's move on. What I want to do is, as an offshoot from what I just talked about with not Milan Patterson, but with Corin Rankin and her vision, is I do want to explore California's future under the new leadership, but I came across this article, a Newsweek article, Republicans' next target, California. And yeah, right. I don't believe that from the national scene, but I believe we have an opportunity. And the reason I want to talk about this is it does talk about our future, and I want to discuss that, but it also talks about Mike Madrid. And what I found is fascinating is Newsweek went to a Lincoln Project, establishment in terms of stereotypical as you can go person. And he's a so-called, I know Latinos. No, you don't, brah. You're so out of touch in your ivory tower. You know, you don't. But that's a go-to. So a little bit first about California. Obviously, G, we both know it's heavily Democrat. Now, mind you, it was purple at the turn of the century. And right around 2009, when new CAGOP leadership came aboard, it started to exponentially shift to the deep blue. It has begun. Some Republicans believe the political tide might be turning. Real quick, G, is it turning because of the party, or are we talking Trump's coattails?
I think it's because of the economy. I think the economy is where people are going, okay, we need something different. We need something new. The economy was good under Trump. So maybe it is Trump's coattails, because I think they were pining for the days of 2016 to 2020. I'm not convinced that these coattails are going to last in 2028. At least I'm not convinced yet.
I agree, but in 2012, the economy was in shambles too, and we didn't get squat. So I give Trump credit, because at the end of the day, the outside factors will always lay the foundation for what the candidate has to actually convey to the country. And Trump did that. Because I'll be honest, had it been any other candidate, I think the Democrats win. I really believe that. I don't think there was another candidate out there that could have done it, including Vivek. Vivek is so smart where sometimes I think he's a great communicator, but he can step in it because he's so true to his belief system that he doesn't care how steep that hill is. He's going to climb it, whereas the average American goes, that's like this way up, you know? So
right.
That's why I think Trump, and I guess what I'm trying to say, it's how Trump speaks. They mock him, oh, he speaks like an eighth grader. Well, that's how America speaks, you know? And when people say that, I'm like, really? All right, go back to your ivory tower then. I really believe that, you know? Oh, you're so superior because you think you talk more intellectually, you're smarter. Where's your $2 billion? Or at this point, where's your $5 billion? The arrogance of people, he's stupid, he's this, he's that. He's incredibly intelligent in a common sense way. All right, so we got the governor's race coming up. The party supposedly aims to capitalize on this momentum. Brian Jones, who we both personally know, we've met him multiple times. He's my state senator, his representative. He's getting ready to term out. But they all see all this Democrat vulnerability. And a poll was done by Capital Weekly. Do you think the Democratic Party has shown an ability to present an effective case against the Trump administration? Unquote. The reason that polling is, that's how big Trump's influence is on the nation in every state. Only 11% said yes, 79% said no. 19% of Democrats expressed confidence, 68% said no. Voters described the Democratic Party with words like lost, ineffective, weak, toothless, ineffectual, and floundering. Your thoughts on that? And can the party legitimately, based off its past history since 2010, do we have the capacity to capitalize on that?
For the ones in the middle, yes, we do. I think if we show how illegal immigration has really hurt our state, our nation, I think we could capture those people in the middle. But again, like among Democrats, 19% expressed confidence, 68% said no. Well, a huge group of those are the hard left, and they're telling Schumer and company that you guys are way too centrist, right? So we're never going to capture those people. Those people are irretrievably going to be on the left, and push come to shove in 2 years, in 2026 for the governor's race, who are they going to vote for? Anyone who expresses a far left view. So we don't have any hope there. So, you know, the question is how much in the middle, what's the percentage in the middle that we could capture? And I think we could capture that with someone like Corn Rankin, leading the way.
I got to be honest. I will push back on that. On the surface, it's easy to say that those hard lefters, we're not going to capture them. The problem, and maybe it's being raised in a dictator country as an American citizen, protected all that, where I wasn't involved in it, but I saw it. When there's only one message, G, and that's all you hear, that's what you believe. So I believe if these Republican candidates can get into the blue districts, they can win that. To give you an example, right around, I don't know, in the early 2000s, it was 30 years ago or something, there was a group, it was a church group, granted, that went into Riverside County. They started knocking on doors, specifically into the barrios, and they brought Spanish speakers with them. About 70%, 80% of the people they spoke to, they thought their Democrat representatives were pro-life. They thought their Democrat representatives were following the game plan they believed in. They were shocked when they realized, you're telling me that my representative represents this, this, and this that I'm against? And the woman I was speaking to, you may know her, I can't think of her name right now, but she said they were flipping voters, changing their registration then and there. And that's an extreme example because I'm talking to, there were a lot of them who were non-English speaking, etc. But that's a big base here in California. But the point is, you get a kid who's also graduating college. They get that first paycheck, that second year, third year. They start to move up. The housing crisis gets even worse. I think the opportunity is there, but only if we actually get our message out. Because if you only hear one message, eventually you believe that message. Any response to that?
No, I agree. I remember coming out of college, I was talking to a friend of mine, and you know, he was black, and he said, "I don't vote Republican, I'm black." That was his reasoning. I mean, we didn't talk anything about, you know, economic issues or pro-life, pro-choice, nothing. It was just his skin color. And I just kind of said, "Well, haven't you thought through it more?" He's like, "No, I vote. This is the way my mama taught me how to vote." I'm like, okay. So, I mean, there's opportunity there for people who think like that, because it has to be about the issues, like you said. And this guy did seem more aware of, okay, yeah, well, I have to be pro-choice. I have to be this. I have to be that. But do you really have to be? Like, what, you know, let's challenge their thinking. This guy was an intelligent guy. I mean, he's a lawyer now. So, you know, outside of college, you know, he wasn't a lawyer yet when we had this conversation. But so I think we do have opportunity there. But, yeah, you're right. A lot of people are not paying attention. They're just told who to vote for, either by their neighbor or by their family, or they're just told, well, this is how we vote as a community. We always vote Democrat. And if you don't vote Democrat, you're betraying your community, you're betraying your race or whatnot. And that kind of reasoning is ludicrous, and I hope we can make inroads there.
I think you hit it on the head, inroads. We got to start making inroads. You see, people, we have live in such a short-term satisfaction. Is that the proper term, short-term? Where everything's short-term, short-term. So that's one reason we've lost, because what we have to do is make inroads. And it may take, God, it may take up to 50 years to turn this state red, but it can be done. And so let's get to the heart of this article. And that's obviously the individual GOP consultant, Mike Madrid, and he told Cal Matters that associating with Trump, and to remind the audience, Mike Madrid is a co-founder of, oh my gosh, what's it called again? The Liberty Party? No. Project.
Lincoln Project. Lincoln Project. Co-founder.
Lincoln, and the Lincoln Project are these are your stereotypical rhinos who have become anti-Trump just for the sole reason they hate Trump, the TDS. Now, he's pushing out there on the National Newsweek magazine, it's a national magazine where I found the article, but he told Cal Matters that we must not associate with Trump. That could be damaging, especially with the economic uncertainty tied to Trump's tariff plans on goods from Canada, Mexico, and China. And some experts say that could increase inflation, no argument here. Again, Madrid is a veteran GOP political consultant. He's a nationally recognized expert on Latino voting trends. Now, this is what his resume says. Over 30 years of experience in local, state, and federal campaigns. The reason I say this is what his resume says, well, Joe Biden was 40 years of foreign policy, and literally 90% of his foreign policy decisions and actions proved to be wrong. He served as the political director of this, the California Republican Party. Again, co-founded the Anti-Trump Lincoln Project, and he's currently a partner at Grassroots Lab, a political consulting firm. And I actually called them up a few times looking for information. And then when I found out who they were attached to, this was around 2018, I was like, no, screw you guys. He's also the author of The Latino Century. It's a book that explores the impact of Latino voters on American democracy. Do not buy that book, people. And he's worked across party lines, and that's just, he's mouthed Democrat mantras because he hates Trump. I'm being very biased and one-sided when I say this, but I don't say it without having good reason. And he also epitomizes my belief of why the Republican Party has lost California and has become popular, because he represents Democrat light. And if you're looking at an aisle and you're a Democrat, do you want Democrat light or do you want the actual real thing? You want the real thing. So that's what he's brought to the state party. So a Public Policy Institute of California poll was conducted just this past February, G, and only 1 in 3 Californians approve of Trump's job performance. His approval breakdowns, 84% of Republicans, 7% of Democrats, and 28% of independent voters approve. So obviously 7% of Democrats is the problem. He's less popular among Californians than any president since before 2005. Your thoughts on that, G, and based on what we've talked about so far?
Well, first of all, the Lincoln Project, I've looked at their Twitter feed, and I thought that guy was a full-on Democrat. I mean, whoever's posting, I don't know if it's Mike Madrid or, you know, his acolytes underneath him, but I was getting LDS, Lincoln Project Derangement Syndrome, just reading it, and my, you know, blood was shooting out of my eyes. So I, you know, at this point, whatever they say, I take with a grain of salt. But I do agree with the idea that, like I said earlier in the show, the TDS out there, you can find someone who will agree with you on 10 different items, but the moment they see, well, Trump's pushing it, okay, I'm against it. And so there is a, and I think Mike Madrid's projecting, obviously, there is a Trump bias in California, and people will shut off and tune out the moment they hear that. Now, this poll was taken February 4th through 11th, where one out of three Californians approve of Trump after a whole 2 weeks, maybe three. So, you know, Democrats obviously were completely arrayed against him. And then you're looking at 84% of Republicans. So it's an independent, that mushy middle, the 28%. Right.
I want to drill down to get your take. 7% of Democrats. That's, in essence, why Mike Madrid is saying, do not. He goes, they're only 7% Democrat. Do you agree with Madrid is what I'm asking? And if you don't, why?
Agree with Madrid of not bringing Trump into the conversation.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually do agree with him in terms of making inroads here in California, that we need to make it about policies and positions rather than personalities, and that's going to be key here. Corinne Rankin, I mean, if she wants to embrace Trump openly, that's fine, but if she's going to make inroads with the middle, it's got to be about the positions and policies.
Well, see, this is why I'm going to push back hard. How are you going to go to a Democrat and do a policy position that is a Trump policy position, but not name Trump, knowing the Democrat next to him is going to go, that's one of Trump's policies? You can't separate the two. They're so intertwined. You know, so there's,
right.
In my opinion, there is no way you can't bring Trump into the conversation because these are his policies.
Okay, so I will tell you, I'll give you a good example. Okay, so earlier you said that there's not a lot of daylight between a MAGA and a principal conservative, right? But where there is daylight is on the issue of tariffs, and this is what Mike Madrid brought up here. And what I'm more the principal conservative, I'm more about free trade, and I was having whiskey around a fire pit with a friend of mine who's on the left. And he goes, but shouldn't we have fair trade? So here's a guy who just convinced me about tariffs, and it was a left-wing liberal. And I'm like, wait, are you voting for Trump? He's like, no, I hate Trump. But he agreed with the idea that, okay, if they're charging 25% tariffs on us, we can't sit here and charge 0% tariffs on them. We should do 25%, so it's fair trade. Now, if they bring it down to zero, we bring it down to zero. And then that we're getting closer to free trade, but it's fair because we're both equal on both sides. And I sat there and I thought, yeah, I just had a Trump-hating leftist liberal convince me of Trump's position. I'm sitting there going, am I drinking too much whiskey here, or is he? Like, I don't know what's going on here. But that was an amazing night. And, you know, so I do think if you talk about principles and positions, you can convince people. And we talked very little about Trump. It was all about the position.
But you're missing the one ingredient that is that is so involved. One, what was his response when you said that's Trump's position?
Well,
because the moment he finds that out, he's likely not to vote for it.
Just no, he knew it was Trump's position, but I can't remember. But we both agreed to agree. That was an interesting thing.
But you see, there's a big difference. You see, this is why Republicans lose. Politics are based off emotion, you know. So when you sit there and try to talk policy, you're going to fail 90% of the time. Regardless if they agree with the same position. And the problem is, I go back to what I said earlier. When you don't sit there and say, you're right, that's Trump's position. And did you know he also did, he's a black guy. Did you know he also did this with the HBCU's college? Did you know he did this with American wages that directly impacted? You have to talk up not only the policy, but the people representing your policies. You can't separate it. And we don't do that. So again, this is a long-term game. 2 years from now, tariffs may or may not be an issue. Tariffs are still an issue 2 years from now. We are bleak as a party. Let's be honest. But they're just right now supposedly an arrow in his quiver. But that's my whole point is politics are not policy and the candidate. They're one. And until we realize that, we will keep losing because we are attached at the hip. So instead of staying silent on Trump, which is what the Republican Party in California has done since 2015 when he first came out of the elevator, we have to defend him. We have to defend him and intertwine it with the policies and use the specific points that affect him. That's just a general talking point you were in. The average person doesn't care. But if that average person likes a certain product or something that's directly impacting them, we have to be smart and put it in their terms. And that's what Democrats do emotionally. We don't. And that's what I'm hoping Corin Rankin can bring. So when I talk to a black person who's college educated, who's pro-black, went to a black school, or was part of the black fraternity at their university, and I have a lot of black friends in the South, so that's an easy example, I bring it up from that perspective. They'll relate to the HBCUs. They'll relate to the black communities. Because even though they're from the South and they're pro-black, they are now in the real world. You know, so that's where you affect them, and that's where you hit them. We're not going to separate. On paper, G, that's a great idea, G. It's never going to work when you follow through, you know? And that's why I will push back hard on that. And that's the reason we're in this mess. Trump is so hated. That 7% of Democrats is a product, or rather 93% that hate him is a product of us keeping our traps shut and trying to separate policies from Trump. Because that's, I mean, you agree that that's pretty much what the Republican Party of California has pushed since Trump's election in 2016.
No, I've known so many elected Republicans who are now, you know, have said, I want to say around the 2018 timeframe, oh, well, I'm independent now. I'm not technically Republican. And you know some of those people here in San Diego. And no, what they were not doing is distancing themselves as a Republican. They're distancing themselves from Trump. So I agree with you that we should not be afraid to bring up Trump. But look, he's not running for re-election again. We've got to the next person running for president. No, I get that. But the next person running for president has got to bring these ideas forward as well and sell them as his or her own ideas, right? The idea of
correct. And tariffs. That's marketing, charisma, persona. They've got to do that, you know, but because you're intertwined. And so, for example, abortion. I am pro-life, but I do believe it's a woman's choice. We just have to convince that woman. But the moment I say pro-life, what do they think? They attach us to the fundamentalist arm of the party. So, you know, so you're intertwined. So it's just how it is, and it's not fair, but that's how it is. So my take is simple. Greatness does not come from sidestepping the issue. Kobe, when he lost a game, you know, it was his birthday or anniversary or something. The family was looking for him. Where's he at? He just lost. He's in the gym practicing his shots. Michael Jordan. There's a reason Kobe never went to another team to pursue a championship like LeBron. Michael Jordan, the same thing. They were focused. There's a reason LeBron's become a journeyman hunter for those championships and has to have a team around him. And to achieve that greatness, to regain the state, we've got to sit there, hit me on the chin because I'm going to hit you back harder. And until we do that, and I'm not saying it because it's a belief system, I'm saying that since 2015, we've gone your route, trying to separate. And it's not that I don't agree with your route. It's I don't agree with it because I've seen it in action. June something, I can't remember her name. I think you know her. I asked her when she was running for state assembly. I go, you've not mentioned Trump. Where do you stand on Trump? And I swear to God, G. Well, she started doing skee-ball or whatever they call that, you know, because she didn't know how to answer. She didn't want to answer, and that's why she lost. I told her right at the moment, I will not vote for you. I will not recommend anybody to vote for you. If you can't support the president and the leader of this party, then you're not a Republican. And that's one reason, because that's how conservatives think. And Corey Rankin and Mike Madrid. So let's keep moving on. We really bogged down. I apologize.
So
he's saying you can't get Trump. Trump's ways were made because of Trump and the policy. You said it was economic. It was economy where they're like, damn, man, my wallet's empty. But they said that in 2012, and Mitt Romney wasn't able to convey his message. Trump said it. So my point is, these moves, these shifts, these 5 and 10 point shifts, depending on which one of the 10 counties that Trump flipped, didn't flip, but made massive increases and actually won some of those. Actually, he did win those 10 counties, were because of Trump. So how, using your method, how will we capture those Trump voters to stay involved? Because it's not just the Democrats. These Trump voters are like one and done. They're voting for Trump, the candidate, not the policy. They agree with the policies, but they're coming out for Trump. So it's not just Democrats, but also the Trump voters. So your quick response on the Trump voters.
Well, no, the Trump voters, I think, want that, that boldness to say, okay, here's where I stand. I put my flag down, and I stand with Trump. So to bring those guys out, you definitely need to have a lot more boldness. I'll push back on your pushback. So Kevin Faulkner was running for San Diego County supervisor, and there were signs all over saying Faulkner stands with Trump. He didn't put those signs up. It was his opposition, right? So they were linking him to Trump, not in a sense to make him stronger, but they thought that would weaken him. And so
why did it weaken him? Seriously, what is the main reason it weakened him?
Well, one, I would say that, well, he didn't come out strong in either direction, right? He just didn't say anything about Trump. He was just running on his own merits. So that's why it weakened him, because I think voters out there said, well, okay, where do you stand? Do you stand with Trump or do you not? So there was never an answer. That's my take on it.
So Kevin Faulkner was not only shellacked, he was destroyed. It was a beat down of gladiatorial proportions.
It was a 60 to 40?
Yeah. It was a type of thing where he didn't even make – it was Mike Tyson versus Joe Frazier. He got hit. He's knocked out. And as he's falling down, Tyson hit him 2 more times before he hit the ground. That's how pathetic an excuse candidate he was. And the audience, if it seems I don't stand with him, no, look at him. I loathe him. He's a terrible candidate. He's an establishment candidate. We knew where he stood, so conservatives did not choose to vote for him. And when you looked at his policies, half his policies were Democrat, and people are going, hey, well, he had to go Democrat. Like, no, he did not. But here's why he lost. He did not go into one damn blue district. I asked about that. No, he's focusing. He's trying to bring the base out. They think with the Trump, yada, yada, yada. You know who else did that? Bonnie Dumanis and every Republican cohort, and I was on that campaign trail, said she's the only one who can win this race. And I'm like, she's not going to any blue. I go, not to mention the message that's going around the minority districts is, hey, she sent half your population to jail, you know, when she was a DA. She was a terrible candidate, but they thought her name recognition. And you know what? I said this, and I was on the campaign trail. She actually approached me about that. Well, I heard you don't think I can win, you know? And I told her why. I said, if you could change that, then yeah, maybe. And she got shellacked. That was against the now disgraced Fletcher. What's his first name? Nathan Fletcher. You know? So Kevin Faulkner, the pushback on your pushback and my pushback. I kind of like to cut to the chase and get to the people. Because they're the ones – we can talk on the surface about mantras, about this or that. But Kevin Faulkner not taking that message to the people.
You mean walking the streets, knocking on doors, meeting in the restaurants.
There's too many districts. You're right. That's why you have a damn campaign team. You don't walk house to house. You go to apartment complex. You go to neighbors. You put up all the bulletins. Please come out to this town hall near. So you're town halling the whole campaign. But that's how campaigns used to be done. In the presidency, back before we had jets and all that, they lived on a train for 9 months, traveling from city to city to talk. We've lost that because of the tech push that they implemented in 2009. San Diego County had one of the most robust, if not the most robust, ground game. When Tony Kovarik took over, the state party mandated, we are moving to tech. We're not going to rely on the ground game. They abandoned the ground game, and we did not start losing. We started exponentially losing. I have seen it firsthand, G. You've seen it firsthand. How many times does a politician come, and you may not even agree with half his stuff, but he shakes your hand. I am here for you, my brother. I have gone. My sister has suffered this or this or that or that. They humanized it. And by God, that constituent thinks, I like that guy. He's my friend. And that is what happens. And we don't do that. So when you're not campaigning in blue districts, you're not saying, did you know President Trump, your daughter, President Trump did this to help your daughter. Did you, your son's going to an HBCU? Well, Latinos, we're mostly Latinos out here. He's going well, Trump did this. Oh, he's going to college? Well, did you know now there's 500 more slots for your son to be able to get in because we stopped this program? You humanize it, and we don't do that. That's why I'd love to run. But the problem is I'm an ex-sailor. Enough said on that. any final thoughts on this one, G?
No, I agree with you. In the end, what wins is the personal touch. And talking about the policies while you're out there on the campaign trail. So, that's what our candidates need to do, and hopefully Gordon Rankin can help them to go do that instead of just, buying TV ads and Facebook ads. I mean, that only works to a certain degree, but to flip that 10%, right? If you lost 60-40, you need to get 10% plus one voter to go the other way. And that's doable, right? You're not reaching out to the whole electorate. You're trying to reach that 10%.
So I want to give one more point. I told you last word, but Matt Gunderson's another one. We have abandoned our values. Again, going Democrat life. So Matt Gunderson, I saw one of his campaign commercials during a football game. Smart, he had money, put it in there. His first thing is, I am Matt Gunderson. I am the pro-choice Republican candidate for you. I'm like, boom, you just lost every conservative Latino in your district. Now, he lives in an affluent district, so the Latino numbers aren't as high as most other places, but it's still a big chunk. And when you're talking close races, you got to have that Latino vote. So if I've been his campaign manager, Matt, shut the bleep up. Don't even bring up the abortion issue. But when it comes up, this is how you answer. Instead, he did what I normally say to you, you got to attack something front and center. But he attacked it with the wrong answer. And remember him? He got shellacked worse than the previous guy, who's a nice guy financially. Brian Marriott did. And he had more money. He was out there more. Gee, we were at this. It wasn't a debate, but they were speaking at the Republican. And when I asked him a question, how are you going to sit there and what are you going to do to get Latinos? He gave me a generic, my door's open to everybody. I'm here to make everybody happy. I'm here to give no answer. I'm like, this is your Republican crowd. You can be honest. And people around there were saying he didn't answer. At that moment, I knew it was doomed. He was a pure play, can answer politician who wanted to come across as your buddy, but had no clue. Is he out of touch? I don't know. I don't know the guy, but I knew he was doomed from the start. Your thoughts on that real quick before we move on.
No, I. So you don't answer a question that wasn't asked. So Kamala Harris is making her candidacy about pro-life, pro-choice. And Trump's making about the economy. And everyone's asking, what can we do to get me a job, to bring down inflation? No one's asking, how can I get more babies aborted, right? I mean, that's so 2022, and this was 2024. So I agree with you. Like, don't lead your commercials with an answer to a question that's not being asked by the populace. They're asking, what can we do to bring down the price of gas? What can we do to bring inflation down, et cetera, et cetera?
What do Latinos care about? Bro, what's that gas price? I live in Riverside and I'm driving into San Diego. I'm just an extreme example, but you give up. All right, guys, we're going to pass on the tiny homes. That's an older article. GG, just real quick, the tiny home, $750,000. We don't know where it's gone. These homes were promised a few years ago. There's a few contracts. They haven't been built. I'm going to bring this article up next week. So maybe if you're that busy, we'll bring you up for that segment. But just your quick thoughts on $750 million. Dollars, I think, are gone and not accounted for. The point being is there's so much waste and fraud. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I calculated that around 350 homes would be eventually built for the cost of $750 million. That's $2.1 million per tiny home, 1,200 square feet. I don't need to comment any more on it. Anyone listening knows that's ludicrous. I mean, you could buy a small mansion, at least nowadays, in California for that same amount, and Newsom spent $2.1 million on each of these on average. It's the mismanagement. I mean, I don't know how he's going to get past the primary with his Democrat opponents having another arrow in their quiver saying, okay, you spent $2.1 million for each homeless person to build a 1,000-square-foot home, and they're not even built yet. I mean, I don't think any are built.
No. To the audience, before we go on, my take is simple. New York City started working the micro apartments. I know in Japan they actually had them, and those people are miserable, high stress when you live in a small place. Think about this. The rich and the elites, they want the freeways themselves. They want us on transit. They want their mansions and their Park Place Avenue, big old apartments for themselves, and they want us living in cubicles. Reject any time a politician brings up, we're going to build tiny homes. Yeah, you know, the only thing time. Well, I'm not going to go there. I'm a sailor. I promise the staff I would not go down the road anymore. I found out they're like, you know, you're digging our money making ability when you talk like that. All right, G. Let's move on to the Cali Blitz. And for the audience, this is our quick hit. G and I have been doing that on each segment of the topic, so we're getting pretty good at it. So yeah. It's our lightning round, and let's just get right into it. I think I sent you the question so you had a chance to look at it. Cali Blitz number one, Tesla's path to autonomous taxis in California. And this came from Cal Matters. Tesla has recently been granted a permit by California regulators to operate a charter service, marking a significant step toward its goal of deploying autonomous. Is that how you say, G? Autonomous?
Yeah, autonomous, yeah.
Your thoughts?
I think California, the politicians here, are going to exact their revenge on Elon Musk for his political actions and beliefs. Waymo already has robo-taxis across Los Angeles, and this some of the most urban-dense places, and they're operating already. So Tesla, I think, is going to be slowed down even more and more and more, at least here in California. So we'll see about the rest of the nation. But it's unfortunate because I think that will really bring down transportation costs. That will bring down transportation traffic. So I think that would be a net positive for our country or our state. But I think California is going to slow it down.
I think Tesla's got to start looking at things long-term. Look, Tesla lost billions for years, and Elon was literally funding that company as the world's richest man. And I think there's one shareholder who owns he invested about $100 million in Tesla. I think he's just power-hungry. He's trying to use this to topple Elon. But if Elon goes, so does Tesla right now. And I think this is bad news. They got some permits here to get going, but how long would those cars without a man driver last in some of those urban areas with the hate? So they need themselves to do a pause on this. But I agree with you, G. We get another company there. It's going to bring down the prices. But, again, that's messaging we've got to get out. This could change in a couple of years. But for right now, it doesn't. And before we go on, just a note on the hate towards Tesla. It's towards Elon. They're doing this in Canada. Canadians said, why is all this hate? This is all happening in the U.S., not even affecting us. But yeah, they're out here because they're told what to do. This isn't organic. These are just people told to hate Elon. You know, like EDS now, not erectile dysfunction.
I just leave it at the ED, and people go, oh, yeah, I know what that means. Elon derangement.
Yeah. You have ED, bro. No, I'm not taking Viagra, man. Cali take number two. Protests, speaking of Tesla, I try to keep it local, G, to get a few local stories in. I live in the greater San Diego. I guess technically you live in the greater San Diego. We don't live in actual San Diego City area, but I like to get local stories. And protest erupt at Tesla dealership in Encinitas over Musk and Trump. Now, there's not really much to say about this, but for the audience, it happened last week, March 15th. They gathered around outside a Tesla dealership in Encinitas and expressed their outrage against Elon Musk's role. Now, the audience know Encinitas is kind of like a hippie's beachfront there. Your thoughts on this, G?
Look, they have their right to protest. They don't have a right to burn cars and carve out swastikas on them like the Nazis of the 1930s. Because I remember it was this fascists actually put swastikas everywhere. So, but they have a right to protest. I just don't know that it will be effective. Maybe this is a short-term thing because, you know, political memory is pretty short. 2 to 3 months and then you move on to the next thing. And Trump is doing as Dan Bongino always says, the Rock and Sock'em robots, right? It's just one thing after another. Every week there's something new. And the outrage, I mean, you can't just be at this level 10 of outrage for that long. They're going to be outraged about something else. And Elon Musk will go back to selling his Teslas again.
I agree. This is, to the audience out there, this is a repeat of the 1929 Democratic Party. Y'all go look at history. It was the KKK convention. This is nothing but the burning happening again, just a different form, people. It's a class system. People look at racism. It is racism, but it's also combined with a class. A certain class of people view another class down, and they view all us Trump supporters as beyond redemption, and that's why they gin up this heat. Now, that's just my personal belief. Most people won't tell you that, but I do tie it to those 1929 Democrats. It's just a mirror image I'm seeing today. All right, Cali take number 3, L.A. Crips leader faces federal racketeering charges. I found this one fascinating, G, because Eugene Big U Henley, reputed L.A. Crips gang leader and self-proclaimed anti-gang activist, has been charged with multiple federal crimes using his nonprofit to literally run a mafia-like organization called Big U Enterprises, racketeering, extortion, human trafficking, fraud, and the 2021 murder of an aspiring rapper. And again, they reiterate he uses nonprofit developing options as a front to embezzle funds and shield his illicit operations. Thoughts?
So, is he anti-gang activist,
yeah,
or is the leader of the LA Crips? I'm confused.
Alleged. But that's the whole shtick. It was a front. How many times do we see that in the movies? Or how many times do we see AOC, Maxine Waters, Mitch McConnell? They're just posing fronts of helping the people as they enrich themselves. The problem is they get to do it legally. This guy gets busted.
I get it. In Atlanta, we used to go to this restaurant. Nobody ever ate there, but there was a big back room, and I wondered what was going on in the back room because we were the only ones ever there. And, you know, so I get that. I mean, if he's broken the law, then he needs to face justice, obviously. But that is interesting to have a front of I'm anti-gang while running a gang. That, you know, blows my mind.
There's a business I go to here in near the area with a 10-mile radius. I'm not going to say what it is. Or I'm always telling my wife, they got to be laundering money. There's never anyone in that damn place, you know.
Right.
Okay.
But then their sales receipts shows that they're always selling $30 plates all day, all night, right?
Yeah, if they ever came up to me, asked me my opinion, hey, we need you to test. I plead a fifth. Don't want to get killed. Got to take number 4, school choice bill defeated in California. See, this is what doesn't make the news. This is so for example, with all this talking, taking your messaging, you know, my kid's not getting an education. Well, did you know the Democrats killed this bill? Boom. You got some, huh? Didn't know that. So you educate them. This Cali Blitz talks about the recent bill, Senate Bill 64. It aimed at expanding school choice in California. It was going to give about $8,000 per student, $16,000 for special needs students for tuition and educational expenses. Now, it was rejected in committee. So it means it never even got to the legislative floor. So by a 5-2 vote, and the Democrats opposed it because they want to support public alternatives, the public school. They want to, because that's where they indoctrinate, G. But at the same time, some, and it's not in notes, but some were saying, well, it only benefits the rich. It was a complete and utter lie. Your thoughts on this?
It's not benefiting the rich, it's benefiting the poor. So the rich that I know, they take their kids out of public school, they put them in private school that costs $25,000 to $40,000 per child. And they have no problem paying that on top of their property taxes, which feeds into their public school that they should be, that they would otherwise attend, I should say. But if we ever got it, and we don't allow inter-district transfers into our school. But if we did, we would want some of their money because we're funded basic aid. So basic aid just means whatever property taxes you get, that's what you have. And if 30 other kids joined our school, we don't get any additional dollars, yet we have to spend our own dollars on it. So that's why we don't allow inter-district transfers in. So whatever the Democrats and whatever their talking points are here when they voted against this, they're hurting the poor because those are the people who really need transfers out of their really bad districts, which, you know, might have 30% meets or exceeds as their population into a district that has 50% or more meets or exceeds. Well, they're going to get denied being added to that district because that money doesn't transfer with them. So that's just unfortunate.
Right. So my take is going back to our original previous segments is you go to a barrio where first immigrants or first generations, and they all have young kids. Every parent works to make their kids' life better. How powerful would this message be in talking? This isn't policy, but this is connecting to the emotion. This is what I mean by tying it. Then what happens is those people become one-issue voters. They don't forget that because it impacts what they hold most dear. And until the Republican Party gets that, we are doomed. But this 5-2, typical Democrat voting for public policy, public schools because they are in bed with the teachers union and they don't care about your kids' education at the end of the day. That's why they voted this down. This one here was a surprise to me. Voter ID initiative in California, a push for 2026. This one comes to us from Red State. A coalition in California is working to place voter ID initiative on the 2026 ballot. It's aiming to address election integrity. I think they need about 1 million votes, but here's the kicker. 68% of voter support, including 52% of Democrats, 70% of independents, and 93% of Republicans. So the coalition is led by Bill Esiley, who's an assemblyman. Again, 1 million signatures needed. If that poll is true, it's a no-brainer. It will get on the ballot. Your thoughts?
I think as long as we give voter IDs for free to every single person who would need one, every single citizen, this is great. Or nominal cost. But if I remember correctly, Kamala won every state that has no voter ID requirement. Yep. And in fact, in California, I believe it's against the law to show your voter ID or your ID, right? So that's even worse. But just to firm up our elections, I think the 52% of Democrats know that this is the right thing to do. And I believe we're the only country that doesn't have a national voter ID law, and we should. We should have a national one.
And if I'm correct, don't quote me, but I believe every congressional race that went into the two-week counting mode, Democrats won, despite the fact Republicans were leading them election night. Cali Blitz number 6, Isa, Daryl Isa. He's my representative. I think because they're always shifting districts.
Moving here. The lines, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he's my, and I did vote for him. He challenges California's mail-in ballot counting practices. This is from the Times of San Diego. Representative Daryl Issa has initiated a federal lawsuit against California, arguing that the state's practice of counting mail-in ballots received up to 7 days after Election Day violates federal law and impacts electoral fairness. If he can win this, and this will not be tied to state courts because it's a federal issue, it could wind up, say, at the Supreme Court. But this could change the whole scope of everything, because they don't separate state and local elections from federal elections. It's never separated because every 2 years we have congressional races Two, your thoughts on, well, okay, the lawsuit supported by Judicial Watch, they're a heavyweight in national policy. So your thoughts on this, G?
I remember in the year 2000, a lot of Californians were making fun of Floridians, right? Because of their hanging chad, the double chad, and all that. But now, in 2024, Florida buttoned up their counting by midnight on election day. And like you said, we're counting 2-3 weeks. We don't certify till a month later. I mean, it's absurd. I think ICE is right to, you know, put a clamp on this because, look, a lot of these races came down to just a handful of votes. I mean, and when I say handful, when you're talking 100,000 votes and they win by 100, that's a handful. I mean, you can do some shenanigans to put someone over the top by 100.
That's right. That's right. And people have gone to jail. Big John, my partner, always says, you talk voter fraud too much. And I push back. I said, no, I don't. Every time I talk voter fraud, I'm bringing up something new that has happened. You know, as you know, G, as the co-host there, I've gone through voter fraud from the days of the founding all the way up to the present. And when there's a new one, I talk about it. It's happening. And it's happening here. And as our friend Jamie Miller, GOP strategist, said, once the vote gets into the system, there's no way to pull it out. And that's all these ballots, that's what they count on. So, county blitz number 7, this was near and dear to my heart just because I know a lot of people who San Diego cannabis tax hike comes from the Times of San Diego again. On March 10, 2025, the San Diego City Council voted to raise the retail cannabis tax from 8% to 10% because of a budget deficit. The issue here is the legality and illegality of how you purchase it. Your thoughts on what this increase can do?
Is there going to be a San Diego cannabis party? Throw a bunch of leaves in the bay off a boat? I just wish we had just one sales tax for everything instead of picking favorites, right? And just say, okay, for everything, we're going to have this. Cannabis is going to be taxed at 7.75%, just like everything else. And I'm not a cannabis guy, but I, you know, to punish people, we all know the reason why you want to tax something is to reduce the use of it. But these people who are addicted or really want it, I mean, they're going to pay it no matter it's 7.75% or 70.7%. I just wish there was one sales tax, but they're going to do what they're going to do because they can't manage their money properly. So
a couple of points here. One, cannabis, weed is not physically addictive. You don't become a weed addict, but it is mentally where you want your hit. And the problem with this is what they thought was not going to happen. Again, this is why I argue with Big John. Only a moron would think legalize drugs and you end this problem. Bull. Why? Because you got to live in reality. It's going to be taxed to high heaven. They view it as a non-essential whatever, unless it's to control us during COVID. You got to keep y'all under control and stone. So it was seen as a, what was the term, critical or essential type business or whatever they call those. But in essence, it's just another drug user control. But what it's doing, it's blowing up the illegal market. If you're paying $500 for an ounce of weed, and your local guy can get it for $300, and it's not illegal to buy it. I mean, hey, I just bought it. Weed's legal. It's a local guy who's taking the risk, who's selling it to you, not you purchasing it in terms of it. And it's a misdemeanor now. It's self-defeating, you know. Colorado has had issues too. So that's my concern is all they're doing is helping the cartel. They're helping the illegal drug trade, and that's even more dangerous. Nothing but ignorant people who do not know how to manage a budget.
Yeah, so a small tax, right, would make the risk of buying something that could be laced with fentanyl too big of a risk for too little money, right? So if it's just a small tax, but yeah, once you get a huge tax, you go to the black market, now you're risking people's lives because they're getting stuff off the street, which you don't know what you're getting.
Right. I agree. With the way weed is made, that still happens, but that tends to be a rarity. Why am I defending weed? Cali Blitz, am I on number 7 or number 8? Number 8, Los Angeles faces a billion-dollar budget crisis. This comes from Bloomberg. L.A. is grappling with a projected $1 billion dollar budget deficit, $1 billion, G, for the fiscal year. And obviously some of that's from wildfire recovery costs, declining revenues across the board in everything, and escalating expenses, and also lawsuits. They are paying at the yin-yang because they're getting sued for every little thing. That's what happens with a society that's greedy and it's me first with all these lawsuits. Your thoughts on a $1 billion deficit?
I mean, it's just always these liberal cities that are, I mean, they seem decrepit. They're falling apart. It's mismanaged. And then this huge budget crisis. I mean, it's not surprising to me that this is happening, especially San Francisco's been in this position for quite a long time. And I play this game on my PC called Cyberpunk 2077. I think one day that's going to be L.A. Yeah. 2077, that's 52 years from now. So that's going to be L.A. And, you know, it's just a dark, dismal place to live.
Exactly. I agree. It's and what you have to look at it, Los Angelinos, is look at all the programs going to social service to illegals. They're not programs that help them to get up. They're programs that keep them there and keep them there happy. Why? Because that's a Democrat vote. Instead of fixing the potholes, instead of working on lowering your taxes, these are bloated services. And you have to have some social service. We have compassion, but we don't have enough compassion to keep paying somebody to sit on his couch and smoke weed every day just so they can vote Democrat.
Another thought I had is that we brought in a lot of these asylum seekers from Haiti, and they were shipped off to different parts of the country and given federal dollars to put them up in five-star hotels and in a cart to say, get all the food that you need. That federal money is drying up. So now in the sanctuary cities, how is it going to be funded? And I can see LA going, oh, well, never mind. Maybe Haiti is beautiful, especially this time of year.
No, gee, you're right. Because what happened, 2 years ago? Actually 3 years ago was when Republican governors got smart and started shipping the illegals to the sanctuary cities. And that's because it's easy to be a sanctuary city when the federal government's shipping them all to Temecula, the conservative red spots here in California, and the conservative states. And they smartened up. And Temecula, God bless those people, they had their mobs waiting at the buses, and the illegals refused to get out. You know, and they weren't there to hurt them, to say, not in my town, and DeSantis and others. And it's only logic. It's only logical. Send them to sanctuary cities. They welcome them. This is a major reason, I would imagine, is why we have $1 billion budget deficit, or they have. Not a major, but a big chunk of it. They can't afford it, and they're trying to continue to afford it because they view it as a political, ideological belief that if our CAGLP can take that to heart and use that as a talking point, can make inroads in L.A. Cali Blitz number 9, San Francisco Pride faces sponsor exodus. The San Francisco Gay Pride Parade is losing funding because all of a sudden it's not chick. Cheek? Is it chick or cheek from that
sentence? Chic.
Chic. Chic, yes. C-H-I-Q. Chic. It's not chic to sponsor that. And before I ask you the question, I want to preface this with, again, I'm going to reference my good buddy, the libertarian Big John, who we were going at it hard, one of our uglier battles, because I didn't support Chase Oliver, who supported taking kids to gay pride parades. In San Francisco, this specific gay pride parade, the last one they had, there was fellatio being given by men to men, and then the man was urinating on the guy after receiving fellatio. And my issue is that a place to send your kids to? So this may be political reasoning, but I'm like, take any money away from them, because I'm all for freedom of expression, but I'm not for sexual debauchery and sexual exploitation in front of children. And some of the sponsors, Anheuser-Busch, makers of Bud Light, and Dylan Mulvaney, they pulled $300,000. It's a $3.2 million budget, so that's a big chunk. And other sponsors are pulling out as well. Your thoughts?
You know, what was it, 2-3 years ago, people were joking around, and it was just a joke. But the joke basically shows you what's going on with the narrative. They're saying, oh, you look like a Bud Light drinker.
Oh, that's right.
I'm like, no, I don't drink Bud Light. I'm an IPA drinker. Sierra Nevada is the lowest I'll go. No, I think they just need to sell what they sell, right? And you don't want to alienate half your population by saying, okay, I support this cause or that cause. I think Nike and Disney, well, Disney's unashamed about it, but Nike did that. And I think now they're also pulling back from supporting these causes because I think they want to cater to everyone. So, you know, as far as these parades, like if a company wants to donate to it, power to them. If they don't want to donate to it, power to them. Like, I don't care. They can have a parade, big or small, I don't care. And anyone can give money to it, I don't care. Let them do what they want to do. Should people bring their kids to it? I wouldn't bring my kids. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Oh, I agree. My take is simple. We have to learn to fight fire with fire. These boycott groups keep pushing on these corporations. That's the only way you're going to be able to show the other side, hey, you do it to us, we're going to do it to you. And eventually, saner heads, minds will prevail, and we'll have the kind of like North and South Korea, the line that separates us, but everybody maintains their cool. But right now, they're trying to castrate kids. They're trying to castrate girls or cut out their breasts, all in the name of genderism. And this is part of that formula. So I am happy this is happening. But I agree with G. You have a right to support it. But I'll tell you what, Bud Light, I won't buy one Anheuser-Busch product. That's kind of hard to say. They have their hands in everything from business to beer and everything else. You know, but that's my take on it. Go, 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 groups. Keep pushing the boycotts. And our last Cali Blitz for the night. This was going to be a topic until I saw, it's just starting out in the talking phase. But that is California's shift from gas tax to road charge program. This comes from ABC 30 out of Fresno. California is exploring, the Democrats, that is, a transition from traditional gas tax to a road charge because people are more remote. More electric vehicles, EVs, and they're not getting the tax money. It's not revenue, but they're not getting the taxes they need for their overbloated social service programs. And the reason I say it that way is there's plenty of money for the gas. We're supposed to go to the roads to build them, you know, to maintain them. But they're starting to explore that. Your thoughts, G?
This is a weird political environment. I can't even think of – I mean, the TDS and the ED out there is just crazy. So let me get this straight. The left now, some of these congressmen are selling their EVs and buying gas guzzlers to stick it to the man, Elon Musk. And Republicans are now buying EVs and they're backing up Elon Musk. And then on top of that, now the Democrats want to charge you for driving your EV, and they can't do it because you're not using gas, so they're going to do it per mile. I mean, that's absurd. So it's going to hurt the poor who probably drive the most. I mean, I work from home, so I don't drive that much. So I'm not going to pay this. So it's going to be the poor guy driving all over town, you know, meeting his client's needs, let's say cleaning the pool. He's going to pay the most, right? Because all day he's driving, stopping here and there, and then driving more and more. So it's just another cash grab. If the Democrats were smart and said, okay, we're going to make sure every penny of the gas tax is used efficiently and properly, they wouldn't even need to resort to this. But the reason they're resorting to this is because there's so much fraud and abuse and waste. And they're trying to cover for it by just pulling in more money from the poor schlubs, the Californians out there that are, you know, just trying to survive day to day.
That's true. And to me, if I'm running for Congress or if I'm running for mostly state assembly or state senate, this is one of my talking points. Oh, yeah, so you're driving 50 miles a day round trip. Did you know that your Democrat opponent supports this? You know, because in reality – Riverside County is booming with their homie sales. It's much cheaper than out here. There's people who live in Temecula who commute to L.A. There's people who live where I live in the rural part of San Diego who commute into the city. Working class. The rich, they can afford it. You know? But this does two things for the Democrat long-term gain. It establishes transit. More people logically would go to transit, but they won't. People love their cars. It's going to generate hate. Going back to our original segment sheet, we have to take advantage of this because this is nothing but another cash grab because they don't have enough money because of what G said, the fraud, waste, and abuse, as well as social service programs to help non-constituents. I sound like I hate illegals. I don't hate illegals. My take is take care of your constituents first, and if there's any money to help the illegals go back home, God bless them, we'll help pay them to go back home. That is our show. Any final takes before I close it out?
No, again, like it's just more and more and more money because we need to spend more and more and more. And if there's one thing that's going to turn California red, it's going to be an issue like this, the mileage tax. That could turn California red if the Republicans can capitalize on it.
Exactly. G, thank you for subbing in for Mr. Tyler Collins, who will return next week. He's enjoying some good times in Japan, and I'm an idiot. I'm a big fan of Japanese anime and going back to the Ultraman, and I could have saved about 50% if I'd given him a few bucks to pick up a model, but I haven't bought a figurine in a while. You can see the figurines right behind me, you know, but he will be back. I told him, you got to try out they have conveyor belts of sushi restaurants, nothing but conveyor belts of 10 zillion types of sushi, and that's when I fell in love with sushi. But G, thank you for tuning in. You can find G every Friday night, or most Friday nights, I'll say, on Fired Up. Real quick, G, tell the people who you are and who you represent.
Yeah, so I'm G, or I sometimes go by the nickname G-Man, as you can see right here. And I'm on Twitter, SDGOP. And I also help William host Fired Up. Sometimes I do it solo. But we talk about national issues, conservative politics. And I also serve as a local school board official here in San Diego County.
And there you have it, my friends. That's a wrap for tonight's Fired Up California. We torch, I love my wording, through Patterson's flop, cheered Rankin's rise, and expose Newsom's 750 million tiny homes mirage. Briefly, we'll talk about that more in depth next week. So don't forget, though, you can check us out at grumblingsmedia.com, bookmark it, but also at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, e Pandora. I love tossing my Latino accent out. So before we take our leave, don't forget to like and share this podcast. For G Mangani and my, you know, G, I got to apologize. I always say Mangani. Is that the proper pronunciation?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, that works. G Mangani and myself, William Del Pilar, your conservative Latino. Until next time, we'll keep the heat blazing on California's wild political ride. Because on Fired Up California, the fire never dies. Apologies to Los Angelinos.